Hello there, Podcast Land. This episode of the Behind the Barricade podcast is sponsored by Podcast Texts. Podcasters, do you want to expand your podcast reach to 360 million, maybe even more people? Do you want to make your podcast searchable on Google, Yahoo, even Ask Jeeves? Then look no further than Podcast Texts. You can increase your podcast reach exponentially. You can also reach the deaf and hearing impaired. They can read your podcast. It's unbelievable the amount of ways Podcast Text can help you. Maybe you have a few links you'd like to include. Not a problem. You can include them thanks to Podcast Texts. Seem too good to be true? Visit PodcastTexts.com to create a more dynamic user experience for your audience today. Episode 49, Steve Pelferman of the Music Launch Hub. Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast, and here are your hosts, John O'Connor and Daniel Tao.
All right, so we're good.
Yep. So anyways, you were saying the most craziest place that did the interview?
Yeah, well, I wish there was a speaker from Madagascar is what I was trying to think of, but there isn't. Maybe New Zealand? No, I can't say that's
like,
crazy.
Yeah, that's like neighbors.
That's
to
next
you, though.
Door to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is kind of crazy. You are talking halfway across the world in the United States right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's. I mean, the hardest place to connect up with is Eastern Standard Time. It's been so hard, and so many speakers on the summit are in Eastern Standard Time.
Of course they are.
So it's 9:23 here. What time is it by you?
It's 11:23 in the morning.
11:23 in the morning. Yeah. So it's like completely opposite.
Yeah.
And then 2 hours
Which is
ahead.
Great. See, everybody, nobody wins perfectly. So it's either your nighttime, my morning, or it's my ridiculous nighttime and your kind of ridiculous morning. You know, it's tough.
John, I'd have to say this is the best podcaster, interviewee we've had on just for his accent, would you say?
Well, yeah, there's something about the Australian accent.
It's funny. I watch so many YouTube videos and it seems to be either British or Australian. I don't know what it is. You don't see like many Americans going. I mean, you do, but at least from all these like these popular like gaming YouTube videos, it's like Australian or British. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just what I'm watching and it's common with them. I don't know. It's funny.
Well, shucks, that's pretty good. Really, so I'm just putting on the accent just to try and get some brownie points.
There you go.
Wow, and we're not because we know we suck anyway. So
yeah, we're not even gonna attempt that. Although I could do a pretty spot on Sean Connery impression. That's like the best.
He does it all the freaking time.
Yes.
Let's hear it.
Yes. So we're here with Steve Pelferman. I think that's how you spell your name. If not, fuck you.
Oh God.
There you go. But basically, if I just put my hand over my mouth, it's Bane from Batman.
Batman. You think you could get through me? I don't know exactly what Bane says.
So
I don't know. I thought you were gonna say like you're gonna put your hand over your mouth and just be quiet. I was hoping. I was hoping that.
Oh, fuck off. So Steve, how do you say your last name?
He actually got it right. Sean Connery got it right over there.
Fuck you, Daniel.
I have no accent to do. I'm sorry. I'm just
I bet if you do it without the accent, you get it wrong. But Pelferman is the correct way to say it.
All right, Pelferman.
Yeah. Most people sort of go look at it, and it's really funny when you're in person with them, I've seen people read it off a sheet and try and say it at the same time, and they go Pelferman, and I just like good job,
saying it in syllables,
yeah,
Pelferman.
Yeah, you could do that. But what about our mutual friend Angela? What the hell is her last name?
Oh yeah, and when I get put on the spot with names, I always feel like I'm gonna stuff them up, even when I know them. now I believe it's Mastrodiacomo, but
what?
That actually sounds good.
But because it's like Italian, I think it could actually be Mastrogiacomo.
Yeah, it is spelled like Giacomo.
Mastrogiacomo.
Yeah, okay,
I just went with the American.
Well, it's M A S T R O G I A C O M O. I'm actually looking at it right now. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's close enough.
I'm pretty sure I've heard her say Master Giacomo, but I think it might be Master Giacomo.
Master Giacomo.
Yeah, now, now, Angela, if you're watching, you're listening, and if this is in here, I've just maybe taught you how to say your last name. I'm not sure.
Yeah, really?
You taught her.
It's funny because I've dealt with Angela for quite a while now. Like, she's one of our like oldest supporters of the podcast, and we had like Hydrogen Skyline on, and we played a few other artists from her show. And I keep seeing her last name, and I just never bother to attempt it for whatever reason. Well, I know the reason. It's long and confusing, but...
Yeah, out of fear. Fear of embarrassment. Fear of shame.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fear of getting left out in the dark once you get it wrong for the first time. Then it's like, oh, those guys are out now.
I'm one of those people that, like, think it's one way and just rolls with it until someone's like, dude, that is not how you pronounce it. Like, Ibanez, I literally... you're going to laugh. For like 5 years, it was Ibanez. So like, oh, Ibanez guitars. And everyone's like, dude, it's Ibanez.
You dummy.
But I guess if you've like never heard someone actually say it, how do you know? You know, you just kind of Ibanez. Don't they have some kind of like?
Yeah, they got the little like squiggly line thing.
Yeah,
over.
So maybe I just confused it from that. You know.
Man, that's hilarious. I used to have a guitar shop. I've spent much of my life in guitar shops, and I've never heard anybody ever say Ibanez.
Ibanez.
I've heard Ibanez, Ibanez, Epiphany, Epiphone, Epfop. I don't know. Like, this
I put
really
a Spanish, ridiculous. You know, flavor on it.
You really did, Daniel. But anyways, what does that have to do with the Music Launch Summit?
What does it have to do? Nothing.
Exactly.
Unless you're launching
nothing to do.
Guitars.
So anyways, it is in September, and I'm just getting the dates up, September 13th to the 30th, and it's basically like the best of digital music and helping bands basically have like an online presence in online, I don't want to say courses, but like lectures and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Steve would better explain this for us.
Yeah, you're pretty close. Yeah, essentially...
Right in the ball tonight.
Yes, thank you.
I'm basically doing my best to simulate what it would be like to be in a one-on-one interview at South by Southwest with an expert and a moderator, mm-hmm. but doing it virtually. Obviously, I couldn't really fly to 7 different countries to interview people. Would have loved
nice.
To. Maybe another
nice.
Time.
Nuts, yeah.
So they'll all go up over a period of time and give people the opportunity to learn about digital marketing strategies. But there's also, interestingly, that's what I was started doing. And then I realized I could go so much deeper. And now I've got people talking about writing great songs and people talking about understanding how to make a great home recording and just overcoming like mindset challenges. So there's really something for anybody, even if they're not just thinking about marketing their music online.
Mm. All right, so it's basically, now the cool part is like this is entirely free, but to have on-demand access, it costs a little bit of money, right?
Yeah, rather than a subscription, I've gone for like a lifetime pass. And that'll basically mean that people it's twofold. It's I've tried to make this whole thing have a different like result for no matter where anybody's at. So for somebody who wants it free, as an artist, I'm going to procrastinate if something's free. I'm going to get the information and then not watch it. So I'm basically if it's free, then you come and you got 3 days to watch each thing. Like you got to do the work, come and do it and take it for free. Do it. Awesome. But I know there'll be some folks who want to watch it over a longer period of time and also work with me a bit more in depth. So just trying to make it super accessible for people that want either the extra support or want to just go and do their own thing. It'll work either way.
That seems to be a popular thing nowadays is summits. I know my previous band, John's band now, we signed up through CD Baby and they send emails all the time about, you know, music summits. I even saw something because I was looking up licensing. Well, that's another topic, but they have like a special summit for that. I know a lot of the popular, I don't know if you ever heard of Tony Robbins. He has summits and stuff. So how do you feel like that summit is a way also for people to network, like find other musicians to team up with or?
Yeah, definitely. It's well, actually, I mean, so the Facebook group that I've set up, I set up before the summit, which anybody's welcome to join. That's always free. That I want that to be a place where it's basically like the foyer at a conference, but it exists 24/7, 365. So someone's there and they're like, ah, shit, I'm stuck on this thing. Or I just need to say help. Or I've done something that works and I want to share it. That's a place to learn and share and give support always, all the time. I think that's really important. The summit is really just a way to create a talking point around that, to give people some inspiration to then know what to talk about around what they're doing with their music career.
Wow. And you have some like great guests from like companies like Twitter and Pledge Music. Like, how did you get everyone to, I guess, like agree to this, but like in this time period too?
Yeah. With lots of threats and blackmail, I found all their home addresses.
These fucking Australians, man. These fucking Aussies. Yeah. There you go.
We don't trust these convicts, man. They'll get you.
The accent. It's the fucking accent, that. Man.
I'm telling you, they won't take us seriously, but you.
Yeah.
It's actually been amazing. I was just initially planning on just having like trying to get to 20. And I went to some people I was closer to begin with, and they started making some introductions. And then it just sort of got to a point, I'm like, I may as well just reach out to everybody I want that I can think of, you know, on the fly. And they started saying yes. And so now is nearly 50 episodes at the summit. And yeah, it's crazy. I mean, look, the key principle behind it is I made sure that it's a really like no-brainer for them. Hands down, like there's not really I mean, I'm doing all the work and I'm just trying to create a platform for people. Mm-hmm. I liken it to the same thing as, and when I book shows for my band, I don't go and go like, hey, can we support you? We bring the party and we book the bands and we try and make a theme out of it. And we get, we make sure it's easy for the other bands to promote. So we like take all the work out of what other people have to do and create a show for other people. I'm just doing the same thing here. I'm just going, hey, here's a show. Do you want to be a part of it? Mm-hmm. And most are really happy to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's genius. And that doesn't really happen that much. I mean, I'm not too sure what the Australian scene is like, but with the New Jersey scene, it's extremely selfish if you think about it, yeah, in some ways more than others. That and the whole pay to play thing, which I'm guessing Australia has the same thing. Yeah. Yeah, that's just a pain in the ass.
Kills me.
Yeah.
Look, that's, I think that problem is, I mean, I'm sure there's places that it doesn't exist, but I think it's a global problem. It's a really natural problem that has come from this top down big label mentality. Yeah. And then artists at the bottom are starting to like, because there's so many artists and it feels like there's no opportunities. We're scrambling for the like little bits of hope that we can't get. And so we see an opportunity and we don't go and share it with our friends. We go and apply for that competition, don't get it. And then wonder why nobody's progressing in our community.
Yeah.
But the bands that work together start rising up together. And there's a little record that's near me. You guys might know Courtney Barnett. Milk Records is the label. Yeah. So there's not just, like, if you go to Milk Records, for example, and obviously Courtney's doing amazing stuff. There's some other amazing art. Jen Kloer is part of that label as well. And there's some other great artists on there. They've got that community vibe and they've set up that label to use each other's career to support each other. I think they're the perfect example of how an indie label can exist in the modern age that isn't about me. It's about us, and let's go and build, make some great stuff together. And that's really the ethos that I want to bring out of the summit. Everybody who's speaking at the summit is very much like, yeah, let's work together, mm-hmm. Which I think is really exciting.
Now, do you think it's the problem lies that if someone, like a band gets a show and they book a show, that they're basically, if there's no minimum tickets, they're just going to show up and play and not promote and bring fans? Do you think that's the primary reason why they do it? Obviously, for money reasons, they need to do it too. You know, they need to sell a certain amount to, you know, pay the promoter and, you know, keep the venue up and stuff like that. What do you think is the reason?
It's such a hard one. It's interesting you bring this up. I saw a debate pop up last night in a Melbourne musicians Facebook group, and nobody's going to agree on this. I'm like conflicted because I think it's situational. I do think I mean, there are venues that are out there to mess bands over, but the thing that I think most of the time is the band thinks that's all venues, and they forget that the venue is really needs the band's help, and the venue is there to support the band. And so at times I don't think paying to play makes sense ever, but I do think bands need to take more responsibility of bringing people through those doors. And if they can't, then they need to put in some work before they expect to play. It's not like, hey, I play music, I should be allowed to just play now. I think they need to put in the work, and it's not that hard to build up a fan base now. It's easier than ever. And that fan base could be 20 people. And so if a band is unsure about how to do that, then they need to educate themselves, hands down. Or they need to just put in a little bit more thought, talk to some more people in the community and go, how do we put on something that's going to bring people in, even if nobody knows us? It can be done. So I think everybody, there are unfortunately sometimes like promoters and stuff that are a bit at fault, but I think the automatic assumption should be, I need to put in more work. And that's the same if I'm a promoter or a publicist or a label or a band. Everybody needs to think, I need to put in more work for the other person. And then everybody's going to have a better time if everybody's putting more work in, not for them, but for you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, if there were more, a lot of them are, but if they are open, like, listen, you have to sell 15 tickets, but if you sell 8, you can still play. I mean, you know, that's a good thing, but, you know, to at least keep the venue going and at least keep the bands playing. But it's just, you know, some of them, it's crazy. You get a small show and they're like, oh, we need you to sell 30 tickets. Like, yeah. Are you kidding? You know, yeah. Especially when they ask you maybe a couple, like a week or, you know, to 3 weeks before and expect you to sell 20 tickets, you know, it's kind of
at a ridiculous price.
Yeah. Like, listen, you're asking me to play because you need someone else. And now you want me to sell, you know, 20 to 30 tickets, you know, it's kind of impossible. But at the same time, me and John find that there's not a lot of bands and not all the members in most local bands promote and are willing to promote. And that's like you said, it's part of the reason why there is pay to play and why, you know, it's still
some
a
bands
problem.
Prosper
yeah.
and some bands don't.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. Yeah, totally. No, I think, I mean, overall, it shouldn't exist. I mean, any band I've ever worked with, if they come up and they say, hey, do you think I should do this thing where there's, I sell $20 tickets and I can, no, don't do it. You're feeding the fire. Mm-hmm. Play somewhere else.
Yeah, but it's the,
I just don't think there's a place for it.
Yeah, but I think, like, you know, playing devil's advocate here, it's the only way for a band to open up for, like, a big band at, like, a small part of our careers. Like, for example, myself and Dan, we were in one band called Too Far Lost. I don't think that even matters anymore. But we opened up for, like, Alien Ant Farm. We've opened up for Trapped. But it was all these pay-to-play places. So I think, like, you know, if it wasn't for that, I don't think we'd ever open up for Alien Ant Farm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even Starland is pay to play, but you have to sell like 150 tickets.
Yeah, Starland Ballroom's like the 800 or 1200 max capacity. Like, it's like a club venue, but it's like right before like a small arena type of deal. But like they'll have a show like, for example, Metro Station and Never Shout Never, and something that's not going to draw like too many people, and they rely heavily on the local bands to bring in like 100 like people. But the problem with Starland is, like, if you don't bring in, like, 95 of those people, they'll have to, you know, they'll make you pay the extra for the extra 5 tickets.
And I heard you get blacklisted, too.
Yeah.
So, and it'd be, like, if you don't sell that minimum 150, good luck getting shows there again, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just strange. Yeah. But it's weird how it's everywhere. You know, it's not just here. Like,
even Starland, a popular venue, is pay to play.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, just here, like, in New Jersey, in America, and then going over to Australia, and it's basically the same shit.
It's the same thing. Like you said, it's a global problem.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't know. I mean, there's got to be, like, some incentives. I think, like, look, if we have to sell tickets at, let's say, $20 a pop, and we only get back $2 for each ticket,
yeah,
like, where's the fucking incentive?
It's like 90% of the funds are going to the venue
And the problem is, like, the headliner doesn't go on until 10, and they want you to play at, like, 6 in front of, like, your friends and family that you brought out. So you're playing in front of no, like, other people. And I think that's what screws a lot of things up.
Yeah. Absolutely. I couldn't
agree
more.
He's, like, sitting there thinking about it. Like, this sucks.
It's a really tough one, but yeah, look, I think a lot of it comes down to people trying to, and look, in a lot of those situations, it's either a venue or a promoter being told by a venue that they have to do things in a certain way to bring in X amount of money. Mm-hmm. And I just think overall, if that's ever the beginning place, then we're not going to make anything great. If we're like, how do we get that extra, how do we sell those extra 40 vodka Red Bulls this weekend? It's never going to be a good show. It's never going to come from a good place. I think, yeah, it's a really tough one. As a band, you can still put in work, no matter any of that stuff. You can say, I'm not doing that show. I'm going to get myself to a stage where I've got excitement happening and I can prove it. And you're going to beg me to come and play. Like, a band has that control now. It's just most don't put in the strategy to do it.
Well, yeah. And then also, if you're willing to play your music acoustic, or if you are an acoustic act, open mic nights are free. And a lot of the places, I see one of my friend's band in this area, he sets up everything full, you know, they have full kits and guitars and they play. So, and that's free. You don't have to invite anybody. And actually, most of those places have a lot of people because they're bars, and they're naturally, you know, people are attracted there because it's, you know, because of the alcohol. So, I mean, like I said, there's I think it's open mic night, openmic.org. I don't know if it's just in the United States, but you can literally just put in your zip code and you can find which days, which places in your area do open mics. So if you're, you know, make the sacrifice and play your music a little differently, do acoustic, promote that way. And like you said, nowadays people have an opportunity to promote their music and get fans better than it used to be. Yeah. Do live shows. Set up a live show for your band and stream. If you can't play in front of people and no one's watching, you know, at a local venue, do an internet stream show. You know, you're likely to reach at least 5 people compared to, you know, nobody that you might be not inviting to a venue, local venue.
And the best part of it, these fans or these new fans can just stay at home. Like, they don't have to pay for anything. They don't have to get a babysitter. They don't have to break off plans with someone else. All they have to do is just type in, like, a website, and they see you performing, and they're like, holy shit, I am doing this from the comfort of my own home. Mm-hmm. Which I think that it is part of the future. I think live shows will die out in favor of, like, an online platform.
Mm-hmm. But you think so? Because I don't feel like you're getting the same vibe and feel when you're at a live show. I think it will get better and it will get bigger and more popular. Mm. But and another thing is kind of like to ask you a question. Why do you think popular live stream internet, I guess you could say, things on YouTube, one of them was Deep Rock Drive. They used to have a lot of popular hard rock bands I listened to, and they just, like, vanished out of thin air. Fuse used to have a live thing, although I heard MTV is coming back with some kind
of
music.
I think MTV Live is coming back.
So why do you think that? Do you think it was just something that someone needs to take over in the future and is going to blow it up? Because that happens a lot in business where things, you know, they do it and all that didn't work. And then someone else comes out with the same idea, which is a little better, and it seems to, like, blow up. So who knows? Maybe that might
happen. Often it's because technology isn't quite there yet. I think it might be similar to that. I think there will always be a space for live music because people want the experience. And they want to – and, like, we want to – like, I would much rather if us three were, like, sitting together meeting for the first time in a physical studio, even though this is fantastic. Like, it's – people innately want that human connection. I think fans of music especially do. But – the thing that we'll see, I think when things are going to really take off, even though it's quite big now already, like, there's so many live streaming platforms. As James Wazem is on the summit talking about Gigi, and which was really interesting. But I think when technology catches up and when it's more of a norm for somebody to pop on their virtual reality goggles and actually be in a live show, then I think we're going to start to see a big uptake when it's really accessible for VR shows. But
I mean, hey, listen, nowadays I have someone at work. He does VR with his drones. So you just sit, he sits in a field, puts on goggles and flies around his drone VR. Hey, maybe that's in the future. We just came up with an awesome idea. VR drumming,
VR concerts,
just strap one of those cameras on my chest and then boom.
Yeah. And we're almost there. Like the VR that came out already is, like, phenomenal. But you know that people are going to take it, like, one step further within, like, 5 or 10 years. And then I'm sure on the music summit you're going to have some, of course, on VR. Because that's just the way it's coming.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I love the idea down the line of having physical and virtual events happening, both for what I'm doing here and trying to educate people, but also for my band. Mm-hmm. It's big in my mind just about when we can make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. I actually got a question for you, since this summit basically it caters to the bands that just started out, bands that played for a little bit, touring bands. Like you basically cover a lot of subjects, but what are some of the things that maybe new bands are doing that you're like, you know, I know a lot of you are doing that, but you really shouldn't be doing that. But like everyone thinks that this is the way to go.
Throwing their music out at people.
Just throw it. Hit them in the face.
Promoting their shows. Honestly, I think there's a huge chunk of stuff. Like most bands have it backwards, and I've done it too plenty of times as well. So I know how easy it is.
Yeah.
When we're not sharing and documenting the journey with people, even if there's one person there, then we're missing the whole point, because when it comes to promote, we become a spammer. Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason why people are having, for example, when we're talking about bringing an audience into shows before, bands have it hard because all they're doing is going, hey, I've got a show, come to my show. Or, hey, I've got a new song, come and listen to my song. But nobody's thinking,
why?
Hey, damn, I need some more music.
Yeah.
There's plenty of music, but what people need is a better experience. So I would say if anybody's listening, flip everything around you're doing on its head, because your music and your show and the cool stuff that you think is cool is not interesting. Just assume it is not interesting. Assume it's boring. Assume nobody wants to hear about it. But they do want to hear about what happened in your day. They do want to hear about what made you write that next little riff that might be on a song that you end up putting out in 5 years. People want to hear about everything else. And that is the gateway drug to the music, to the show, to the stuff that you're promoting. And we become spammers if we don't share our journey along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For local bands, it's like spamming the same people over and over again. You're like, hey, you want to come to my show? I almost feel bad, you know, when you're asking like the same person who comes to all your shows, like, hey, I got another show this week. You want to come?
But there's such thing as oversaturating the market too. Yeah. So if you're playing like four shows a month, like opening for like random bands and then doing the pay to play, and only having the same like five or six songs that you're playing over and over again, like what incentive are you giving out to people besides, hey, we're opening up for this band?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah. I mean, the problem is a lot of the local bands, especially in our area, don't tour. Like I know, you know, we all have jobs, but even if it's just weekend tours, I think that's what really will help. You're reaching new fans, you know, different areas, but you're also not having to do a pay to play because you're touring. And then another thing too is, you know, like you said, oversaturating the market. You need, I heard this from, you know, a popular musician and YouTuber. I think her name was like Leah, but she said, you need to take friends out of the equation. You need fans, because, you know, friends are going to be like, oh, sorry, man, I can't make it. Fans are going to be the ones that are buying your stuff, that are going to come watch you and come listen. That's why when you're playing a crap load of local shows, you're only playing the friends. And I just don't think that's beneficial.
Absolutely. And I've been there, and, you know, and you go through that stage where your friends support you and the groundswell starts happening and you're like, this is great. And then your friends start going, oh, like they know that they're the training wheels.
Yep,
and exactly. A few will stick around, but the most part, they'll be like, oh, you're all right now. You got your own people. Cool. Well, great. I don't have to fucking come anymore.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen to every band. We need to have those other people. Just on that touring note, I think that's a really important point, because I think it's great to go and play in other places, but doing it without strategy just means you end up hitting
a
definite brick wall. And I would say to anybody listening who's thinking, hey, maybe I go and play somewhere else next weekend, get on Twitter and find people in that location and start making some friends before you go there, because you can do all the groundwork from where you are at home. I just don't think people are putting in the work to go, well, you can actually literally connect with new people in a new place right now and then see if it's a good idea to go and play a show. Really easy.
I think that, like, you know, it all comes back to the problem is it's so hard to get four or five people to think that way. You might get, you know, two or three members in your band that are amazing musicians, and one or and maybe two members are really passionate and will put in the work, but it's so hard to find a whole band that actually would do that, you know?
And are as talented to be able to tour and to play shows. So.
Totally agree with that. That's a really tough bit. But if, you know, like even if it's just one person in the band who wants it enough, who gets it, that's enough.
Yeah.
One or two is enough and the others, you know, not everybody has to be the out there social media person to make it all work. Everybody just needs to be ready to be like, yeah, okay, look, I'm open to having a chat and meeting a new people. I'm open to doing that open mic show, and I'll shake hands with a couple of new people at the end, and there's a couple of new relationships that we've made. Like, those sort of things make all the difference for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So it looks like we have less than 4 minutes left. So let's get back to the, Music Launch Hub, and you could go to musiclaunchhub.com, and you could, I guess, sign up for the summit. You could see all the great people that are taking the time out of their busy day to do this for, I'm guessing, for free. I'm not too sure if there's any contracts or anything, but I mean, you do have, you know, it's over 40 plus music industry masterclasses, help launch any career from a local band to a touring band. And, you know, it's just, this seems like it should be done like at South by Southwest, like every single year, but the way you're doing it too. So I don't know. I think you have something here. I think if you could bring it over to the United States, I think you have like the best idea and the best product.
Thank you. That's super kind. I'm glad it's connecting. It's just been an idea. And I just need to pull the trigger on the idea and see what happens. And it's honestly, it started from very much nothing. And what's driving it really is people who care about the idea. And that's, I guess that's enough for me to know that I need to keep going. So I appreciate the feedback, and I do hope to bring it into a more physical form, definitely at some point.
And what is this, your second year of doing this, or?
This is the first one.
Oh, this is the first.
I mean, I've been working with bands for ages, but
yeah,
this is the very first one.
Wow.
That's amazing.
So what are you most nervous about?
Oh, getting it finished. This has been so much
just getting
work.
Getting to the end.
Yeah.
It kind of snowballed, and getting enough sleep at the moment is like, it's 2 weeks to go till it happens. Just getting enough sleep and getting everything done, and not getting it done to perfection is the only thing that I love having things perfect, and it's just not possible. So, I just hope people come along and open up and are open to learning something new, and come out and hang out in the Facebook group, and that's the most important thing.
Absolutely. So let's throw out some plugs here. Like I said, you could go to musiclaunchsummit.com. You're also on Facebook, facebook.com/musiclaunchhub. Twitter.com, same thing, musiclaunchhub. Instagram.com, same exact thing. You basically got everything covered. And, you know, you have the free, it's for free, September 13th to 30th. Did I get that right?
Yep.
September 13th to 30th. You have free access if you want on-demand access. You know, you pay, how much is it for on-demand?
Early bird prices, well, basically the sooner you get in, the cheaper it is. And it's so cheap, like, at the beginning. So whenever you hear this, come and if you think you want the VIP thing, have a look at it, get in early, you'll get a steal. It's basically to encourage people to jump in early rather than sit on the sidelines. My VIPs are already getting access to content, so they're already getting far more than if they had
awesome.
Waited.
Plus, this will be out tomorrow on iTunes. So, so whatever price we're seeing now is the price you'll probably be seeing tomorrow. So,
bam.
Yeah. All right,
Steve. Thank you so much.
Man,
enjoy
thanks,
the rest
man.
Of your day while we actually get some sleep.
Good luck.
Thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
You're welcome. No, thanks, man.
Definitely, man. Thank you so much.
I can't wait to come and meet you guys in person.
Oh, we'll definitely.
Do. If you're ever in New Jersey or New York City, let us know.
100%.
Awesome.
Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome. Thanks.